And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great hour for you. We're obviously going to be catching up on the news and breaches of the week. And our deep dive, you do not want to miss. It is called Why Social Media Will Cause the Death of Us All. And it's something that you really need to hear because I think 2020 has really underscored this massive divide we have that social media is driving. So stick around. It's going to be a great hour. And as always, let's start with the news. And in Facebook news, Facebook is deleting evidence of war crimes. You heard me right. They are deleting evidence of war crimes. This is crazy. And it's coming from The Verge. And it's probably not quite what you think. But nevertheless, Facebook is doing this. And I don't think they support war crimes, for the record. I'm not saying Facebook is pro-war crimes, but they are deleting evidence of them. Here's what we're talking about. The black market for looted goods is flourishing on Facebook. For example, on October 24th of this year, an art trafficker in Darna, Libya, posted a series of unusual ads. For sale, a Greco-Roman statue, its marble bust covered in a toga. If it looks like it belonged in a museum, that's because it did. Now, the seller posted photos of the piece in private Facebook groups dedicated to trafficking antiques. Now, while Facebook has banned the sale of historical artifacts in June, many of the posts are in Arabic, and Facebook lacks the expertise to properly enforce this new policy, meaning they don't have the army of Arabic speakers or readers that they need to actually go into these groups and take a look at what's going on. When Facebook is able to identify groups that actually just abandon these guidelines or rules, experts say the company simply deletes the group, which then expunges crucial documentation for researchers studying stolen art. According to Katie Paul, who is a co-director of the Athar project that's involved in this, and I quote, "This is critical evidence for repatriation efforts and war crimes. Facebook has created a problem, and rather than turning that into something they could contribute to, they are making it worse." Now, the implications go far beyond art theft. I'm not stopping there. Since 2014, looted antiques have been a major funding source for terrorist organizations like ISIS. The Middle East is obviously rich with cultural artifacts, and the market for stolen goods isn't that regulated, just like drug trafficking and arms sales. The seller of this Greco-Roman statue posted an ad in Facebook groups, and rather various Facebook groups, that had between 15 to 18,000 members. So there were a lot of eyeballs looking at this. There, these traffickers live stream their looting activities. They give each other tips on digging and finding buyers for their pieces that are still in the ground. And Athar is currently monitoring 130 groups dedicated to trafficking antiques, obviously many of which are funding terrorist operations. Now, a group in Syria with 340,000 members has posts showing looters uncovering a mosaic. In the comments, Athar documented one user saying the mosaic shouldn't be removed, while another one responded with a laughing emoji saying, "Die of hunger for the history of the country." So that, I think, really kind of sums up the situation that we have here. Now, the problem is particularly grave in active conflict zones where trafficking antiquities is considered a war crime. Now, according to Samuel Hardy, who is a research fellow at the Norwegian Institute in Rome who specializes in cultural heritage and conflict, and I quote, "It's infuriating and problematic. When Facebook pulls evidence that people are self-publishing, we lose not only the ability to track the cultural property and return it to the victimized community, but also any hope of identifying and stopping the criminals who are making money from it." Now, Facebook isn't the only platform that is struggling with how to police this kind of content while preserving evidence for research groups. YouTube has also received criticism for removing extremist content that researchers were trying to study. Well, both Facebook and YouTube, who's owned by Google, will sometimes preserve evidence at the request of law enforcement. This policy does not help academic researchers. And in this vein, I think it's very similar to a data breach. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a situation after a breach where the IT team or the third-party IT company has just wiped out all of the infected machines, which then makes it harder for us to come in and run forensics to actually track the source, make sure that we've caught the entire virus or we can identify the gang, all these kinds of things they might need for their insurance. That is something that is very important. And the other side of this, the double-edged sword, is that if Facebook goes ahead and deletes this group, or these traffickers figure out that Facebook or is not a good platform, they'll go more dark web. They'll go more on unique platforms or something that they create themselves to find each other. And that is going to be much harder for researchers to identify when they are now looking, let's say, for the new place where they're selling art. So it seems like it's in Facebook's best interest, if they have to delete this group, to 100% store all of that content, every picture, video, IP address of the people that logged in, login names, everything from that group, because that they may be assisting the police in preventing a war crime, or at least retroactively fixing the situation. But right now, they are literally deleting evidence of war crimes, and that clearly has to stop. So that is your Facebook/war crime news of the week. And in Apple news, Apple is apparently lobbying against stopping forced labor. Now, I know I did a bit on Apple. I want to say it was a couple years ago, actually. I've been doing this radio show more than 3 years now. And, this is not the first time this has come up, but this is the latest, and it's really unfortunate. Now, this is coming from the Washington Post. Apple lobbyists are trying to weaken a new law aimed at preventing forced labor in China, according to two congressional staffers familiar with the matter. This just highlights the clash between Apple's business imperatives and their official stance on human rights, something I've talked about in the past here on the show. Now, what we're talking about here is the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which would require the United States, the companies in the U.S., to guarantee that they do not use imprisoned or coerced workers from the predominantly Muslim region of Xinjiang in China, where academic researchers estimate the Chinese government has placed more than 1 million people into internment camps. Apple is heavily dependent on Chinese manufacturing, and human rights reports have identified instances in which alleged forced Uyghur labor has been used in Apple's supply chain. Apple, though, for the record, is not alone, but they are one of the most globally known companies that uses China for manufacturing, and so here we are. Now, these congressional staffers, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to the Washington Post, declined to disclose details on specific provisions Apple was trying to knock down or change because they feared providing that knowledge would identify them to Apple. But they both characterized Apple's effort as an attempt to water down this bill. According to Kathy Feingold, the director of the International Department for the AFL-CIO, which has supported this bill, and I quote, "What Apple would like is we all just sit and talk and not have any real consequences. They're shocked because it's the first time where there could be some actual effective enforceability," meaning we've all talked a good game, but now we finally have a bill that is going to enforce this as law, and Apple is balking at it, therefore trying to water it down. Now, Apple spokesperson Josh Rosenstock said the company, and I quote, "is dedicated to ensuring that everyone in our supply chain is treated with dignity and respect. We abhor forced labor and support the goals of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. We share the committee's goal of eradicating forced labor and strengthening U.S. law, and we will continue working with them to achieve that." He also said the company earlier this year, and I quote, "conducted a detailed investigation with our suppliers in China and found no evidence of forced labor on Apple production lines, and we are continuing to monitor this closely." Now, Apple's lobbying firm, Fierce Government Relations, disclosed that it was lobbying on the bill on behalf of Apple in a disclosure form that was first reported by the news outlet The Information. However, the form did not say whether Apple was for or against the bill, or whether it wanted to modify it in any way. Lobbying disclosure forms do not require that kind of information, and Fierce Government Relations referred the Washington Post to Apple's public relation team, and here we are. So we'll see where this goes, but I know this is not the first time, whether it's been production problems with Foxconn, where they had a rash of worker suicides, and all of that, or child labor being found in supply chains for large companies like Apple and HP and all of that in the past. This obviously is a global problem and a situation, but I think the world has been focused on just the horrific treatment that the Uyghur population, this small minority population in China, has received. And so it is nice to see these kinds of bills basically being put through governments like the United States. We'll see where Apple falls on this, or if we get more details, I'll definitely let you know. But that is your Apple News of the Week. And in Google/Fitbit news, if you didn't know, they're actually going through a merger, and that's apparently a human rights issue. I kid you not. This is coming from TechCrunch, and this blew my mind, but they're absolutely right here. I had not actually considered this as a human rights issue. But bear with me here. Now, the human rights NGO Amnesty International has written to the European Union's competition regulator calling for Google's acquisition of wearable maker Fitbit to be blocked unless meaningful safeguards can be baked in. Now, the tech giant announced that its intent to purchase Fitbit for $2.1 billion about a year ago, but has not yet gained the regulatory approval for the deal in the EU. Now, in a letter addressed to basically the bloc's competition chief, Margrethe Vestager, Amnesty International writes, and I quote, "The commission must ensure that the merger does not proceed unless the two business enterprises can demonstrate that they have taken adequate account of the human rights risks and implemented strong and meaningful safeguards that prevent and mitigate these risks in the future." And if you're asking yourself, Nick, how is this a human rights problem? We are talking about data privacy violations. Those are human rights violations. In a report last year, Amnesty International attacked the business model of Google and Facebook, arguing that the surveillance giants enable human rights harms at a population scale. Amnesty International also warns now that Google is, and I quote, "incentivized to merge and aggregate data across its different platforms as a consequence of that surveillance-based business model." And to quote them, "Google's business model incentivizes the company to continuously seek data on more people across the online world and into the physical world. The merger with Fitbit is a clear example of this expansionist approach to data extraction, enabling the country to extend its data collection into the health and wearable sector. The sheer scale of the intrusion of Google's business model into our private lives is an unprecedented interference with our privacy, and in fact has undermined the very essence of our privacy." Now, Google's plan to acquire Fitbit and its health tracking data has been stalled as EU regulators are looking at this concern. The commission has also voiced concerns about the risk of Google locking other wearable device makers out of its Android mobile ecosystem now that it would own Fitbit. And I think this is actually a really good point because, yes, Google, Facebook, and all of these massive platforms offer us free stuff to use, whether it's searching or email or a place where we can yell politics at our friends, whatever it is. But the price of admission is data mining. It's absolutely everything that we have in our personal lives that they want. And that is a terrifying prospect. And when Google, who has been pushing into everything, including healthcare here in the United States, they want to be the nation's aggregator of health data stored on their systems and have bid perpetually for that in various government contracts, when you start combining it with wearable devices and everything else, which obviously they can already probably scrape from the Android wearable operating system, that's a huge problem. We have this issue, and it's a human rights issue, and governments like the European Union have created things like the GDPR, which give their citizens recourse. We need that here in the United States as well, and until we do, we're basically susceptible to these whims as well. And so privacy is a human rights issue. We're humans. We should have the right to privacy. And so that is your Google/Fitbit/human rights privacy news of the week. And in text message news, yes, we're going to be talking about texting, also known as SMS or SMS texting. It's typically vulnerable. We don't recommend it to send secure messages, but there's an app out there that will let everyone see anything you've ever texted. This is insane. And wow. So if you use the Go SMS Pro app, stop using it immediately. Now, this is coming from various sources like The Verge and TechCrunch and others, but messaging app Go SMS Pro, which has over 100 million installs from the Google Play Store for Android, has a massive security flaw that potentially allows people to access the sensitive content you've sent using this app. And even though the app's maker was informed about this issue months ago, they haven't made any updates at all to fix what's going on. And to give you an idea of just how much information the app leaks, this is what TechCrunch was able to find. And I quote, "In viewing just a few dozen links, we found a person's phone number, a screenshot of a bank transfer, an order confirmation using someone's home address, an arrest record, and far more explicit photos than we were expecting, to be quite honest." And that is according to the reporter, Zach Whitaker. Obviously, that's not good. So here's what's going on. Here's the nuts and bolts of it. Go SMS Pro uploads every media file that you send to the internet and makes those accessible with a URL. And this is according to a report by security researchers at TrustWave. When you send a message with media via Go SMS Pro, such as a photo or a video, the app uploads the content to its servers, then creates a URL pointing to it and sends that URL to the recipient. If the recipient also has Go SMS Pro, the content appears directly on their message, but the app still uploads the file and creates that publicly accessible link on the internet. So for example, if you're running Go SMS Pro and you send me a photo, I don't get the photo to my other text messaging app. I am going to go ahead and get a link that I can click on, which then takes me to what you've sent. And that URL, that link, is where the trouble is. There's no authentication required to look at the link, meaning that anyone that has it could view the contents of the link. And those URLs generated by the app, apparently have a sequential and predictable address, meaning that anyone can look at other files just by changing the right parts of the URL. In other words, using a basic example, the very first text could be smsgo.com/links/0001, and the next text message could be 0002, 003, and on and on and on. So theoretically, you could even write a script then that would auto-generate these sequential URLs, and so you could quickly find and browse through a ton of private content. It's all there, zero authentication. What's even worse is that the app's developer has been totally unresponsive, and so it's unclear that this vulnerability will ever be fixed. TrustWave said that it contacted the developer 4 times since August 18th of this year, 2020, to notify them about this vulnerability. No response. None. And I think this really underscores the need that we have to vet all of our apps. And so here are some of the basics that I do when I'm looking at an app. I look up their website. Do they actually have a website? Where are they developing and where do they have jobs listed? Is it in a country with solid data security and privacy laws that give you a recourse for deletion or not? Do they have privacy policies and corporate info displayed in a transparent manner? I looked up this company basically at the Google Play Store and who says it owns the company that owns this or according to the publisher in Android is, and I quote, "Best free video editor and video maker dev." And when I Googled this, all I got were basically third-party Android app sites, and I couldn't find anything at all about this company or this developer. This could be sitting, you know, with the Russian mob for all I know. This is a huge problem. And it speaks to the greater issue, which is verification of app publishers. Now, Apple is fairly decent at this, but things do slip past them. Apple, I want to say it was a couple of years ago, had a rash of apps hit number one on the store that were poorly made or infected or scraping data that were written by some guy out of Vietnam. And so things do get through Apple, although Apple, I think, is more stringent because Google is Wild West compared to Apple. And so I think while there are more defensive options for a Google phone, for an Android phone, That also means we have to educate the population on how to spot suspicious or bad apps. So if anybody comes to me and says, is this app safe? I'm looking up their privacy policy. I'm looking up to see where it's developed, the laws of the country that it is developed in. If it's not in a country that I know, like let's say one of the member states of the European Union or the United States or Australia, Japan, South Africa, et cetera, I'm looking all of that stuff up. I'm seeing where they are developing. So even if they are sitting here in the United States, is all of their app development overseas? And if so, what country is that in that has laws that might be antithetical to my privacy? It takes me 5 minutes to do this, and I have saved myself a ton of headache because I wouldn't download Go SMS Pro to save my life if I was looking at this outside of this article. So that is your texting / SMS texting news of the week. And if you have that app, delete it now.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin. And the past couple of weeks in data breaches has just been absolutely insane because we just went through the holidays here in the United States for Thanksgiving. We see a lot of companies take that opportunity to actually disclose breaches because nobody's really paying attention to it. You're with your loved ones, in this case, socially distanced and all of that. So we've got a ton to go through. And this breaches of the week, or for the last couple of weeks, rather, is going to be the select ones that are the biggest hits that we've seen around the planet. And before I begin, as always, I'd like to thank the people that sent me notifications, emails, messages, whatever that is, to get me that information. And please, obviously, feel free to send me your tips as well. And I'm happy to give you a shout out here on the air. But for today, it's David Walker, Jason Dance, Barrett Peterson, Chris Fellon, and Jacqueline Wolf. Thank you so very much to all of you. And with that, let's start with Americold. They are a cold storage giant here in the United States. And according to their disclosure on November 16th of this year, they determined that their computer network was affected by a cybersecurity incident. And basically, that's all we know right now. But it's looking like it's a ransomware attack. And Bleeping Computer is reporting that it looks like numerous systems, including their phone system, email system, order fulfillment, inventory management, and on and on and on, were affected by this. So hopefully they've got that back up and running now. But that is absolutely crazy. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Capcom. You may remember them from such video game hits as Street Fighter II and a whole bunch of others. They've been around for forever. They're a Japanese-based company, and they just had a ransomware hit earlier in November, and apparently they got hit with the Ragnar ransomware infection. And so basically, they have 350,000 affected individuals that have login accounts to Capcom, and rumors have suggested that the Ragnar Locker Gang is essentially opening up bidding for their information that they stole, demanding $11 million US in cryptocurrency, and Capcom has said they are not going to pay. So we're going to see what happens with Capcom. Hopefully, they will weather this and keep making wonderful video games. Moving on. Let's talk about TurboTax. Now, TurboTax themselves weren't hit, but as we come up to tax season soon here in the United States, your copy of TurboTax is being targeted. Now, the Mount Locker ransomware gang is getting ready for tax season as well by specifically targeting files that is used by the TurboTax software installed into your computer. So when encrypting the computer, the Mount Locker infection not only encrypts files that have extensions like, you know, your Word documents, pictures, movies, all of that, but with their latest version, they are also targeting the .tax, .tax 2009, .tax 2013, and .tax 2014 file extensions, which are associated with the tax preparation software, TurboTax. So by virtue of that, make sure you have good backups of your data that are not attached to the computer. And if you use TurboTax, heads up to you, you're going to want to back up that data, ideally into a secure cloud solution if you can. Moving on, Let's talk about Manchester United. This is the premier soccer league or soccer club in the UK. I believe they're in England, in Manchester, England. They got hit with a cyber attack a few weeks ago, but they say they are not currently aware of any breach of personal data associated with their fans or their customers. Known as the Red Devils, they confirmed this a couple of weeks ago, but said that they were confident that their games would continue, basically their soccer matches would continue, and sure enough, they have. The club statement read, and I quote, "Manchester United can confirm that the club has experienced a cyber attack on our system." So hopefully Manchester United, the Red Devils, will get that cleared up. Moving on, let's talk about Mitsubishi. Yes, Mitsubishi, they got hit once again by a massive cyber attack that may have caused the leakage of information relating to its business partners. And to quote them, company officials on November 20 said they were checking the 8,653 accounts of those it had business transactions with to determine if the information related to bank accounts of the other parties, as well as other information, leaked. That is according to their official notification in Japanese media. They believe that a Chinese state-sponsored advanced persistent threat, basically Chinese state-sponsored hackers, are suspected of this hit. So hopefully Mitsubishi will get that cleaned up soon. Moving on, let's talk about the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. They just got a financial penalty of $65,000 imposed on them. Essentially, this is stemming from a complaint received by the Office of Civil Rights here in the United States. If you didn't know, HIPAA compliance, that which protects your medical data, is basically attached to the Office of Civil Rights. So that's where this complaint would typically go. But they received this complaint there on May 30th of 2019 from a patient who had sent a request to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center on February 22nd, asking for an electronic copy of their medical records that was maintained by the Cincinnati Medical Center. Now, by virtue of that, they violated this because the HIPAA right of access requires that copies of your medical records be provided on request no later than 30 days after the receipt of the request. Further statutes also state that an individual is permitted to have the requested records sent to a third party should they wish. So by virtue of that, the University of Cincinnati simply did not send this person their requested medical records. And by virtue of that, they now have to pay $65,000. I think it would be much cheaper to simply train the employees and get a better process in place. You tell me.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.